You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you in live from Washington, D.C. Mitt Romney stepped in it some time back ago. We are going to, there's actually a bigger picture to this. So there's a bigger picture, even bigger than the bigger picture that everybody in the media seems to be talking about, which I will share with you as we continue through this program. And that bigger picture has to do with how America has fundamentally changed since Ronald Reagan's presidency, since Ayn Rand's ascendancy, since Freddie Koch died and the John Birch Society largely died with him, and his sons, Charles and David, his son Charles, or David rather, ran for vice president on a Libertarian ticket in 1980. And they founded the David H. Koch Foundation, I believe it was called, which then got renamed the Cato Institute and all that kind of stuff. So this is possibly a turning point moment for the Romney campaign and for the Obama campaign. We'll see. I mean, keep in mind, there's still almost 2 months. There's still 50 days, I think it is, maybe 49 now, to go before Election Day, and a lot could happen for better or for worse on both sides. And also keep in mind that there is this huge pool of ditto heads who believe this idea that 47% of Americans are freeloading moochers because they don't pay federal income taxes. The actual percentage of people who are not elderly, in other words, getting Social Security or Medicare, and by the way, how can you call somebody who's living on Social Security and Medicare a moocher? How can you call them somebody who has a victim mentality when they paid their entire lives into those funds that they are now getting back? And in fact, most of them are getting them back, and they're paying income tax on their Social Security thanks to Ronald Reagan. How can you call those people who have a victim mentality who are going to follow the president? Come on, give me a break. But the percentage of people who are not elderly and who are not disabled, I mean, genuinely physically, mentally disabled, incapable of working, the percentage of people who are not elderly and who are not disabled, who do not pay federal income taxes, is between 6.9% and 7.1%. It's around 7%. And that 7% is made up mostly of people who have either such badly paying jobs that they're basically below the poverty level, or it's made up of these several thousand multimillionaires who pay no income taxes whatsoever. Keep in mind, Mitt Romney pays 13.9%. He pays less than a cop or a firefighter. And this is the guy who's lecturing us about the victim mentality of people who don't pay income taxes? The cons, they always say, don't pay taxes. What a lie. Everybody pays sales taxes. Everybody pays use taxes. Everybody, most everybody pays state, property. If you're not, even if you're renting, you're paying property taxes indirectly. You buy things, you're paying sales taxes. You buy gasoline, you're paying gasoline taxes. You register your car, you're paying a use tax. There's no end to it. That 7%, excuse me, that 40% more or less who are working, who aren't making enough to pay federal income taxes, but are paying taxes, they are paying 100%, on 100% of their income, they are paying FICA taxes, they're paying Social Security taxes, basically payroll taxes is the general term that's applied to them. That 40% that is paying payroll taxes, they're paying more than Mitt Romney pays in federal taxes. And they're paying more than Mitt Romney pays as a percentage of his income in FICA, in payroll taxes. Because he only pays payroll taxes on his first $110,000. And after that, of the $20 million he made last year, or thereabouts, we don't really know for sure because he hasn't told us. But thereafter, he pays nothing. Zero. Not a penny in Social Security taxes. If the Mitt Romney class, if the people in that room, the fat cats in that room that he had just been talking to, if they were all paying Social Security taxes on every penny of their income, Social Security would be solvent forever. Social Security could have a cost of living increase. Social Security could pay more benefits to people. Social Security and Medicare, you'd never have a problem. You wouldn't have people sitting around the Paul Ryans of the world. And for that matter, a lot of Democrats going, you know, we really need to think about Simpson Bowles and cut Medicare, you know, a little bit, cut Social Security 3%. That was the recommendation of Simpson Bowles, cut Social Security 3%. How come nobody's talking about that? By the way, it wasn't the Simpson Bowles Commission that recommended that. That got blown up by Paul Ryan because it wasn't crazy enough. Paul Ryan wanted them to totally privatize Medicare and Social Security. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to cut it 3% and raise the retirement age. And he said, that's not good enough for me. And then Jan Schakowsky was also on that committee. And she said, no cuts to Social Security whatsoever. No cuts to Medicare whatsoever. Let's just raise taxes on rich people just by 3 or 4% like Bill Clinton did. And you still have these commentators going, oh, Bill Clinton reached across the aisle and worked with Newt Gingrich to balance the budget. What a lie! Bill Clinton raised income taxes on the very rich by 3%, and not one single Republican in Congress voted for it. In fact, Newt Gingrich went on the floor of the House and said, this is going to cause a Great Depression. Right. How'd that work out? What, 3 years of balanced budgets and surpluses? Such a huge surplus that George W. Bush said he was going to pay off the entire national debt with that money when he became president. That was his first State of the Union address. Can you easily or quickly tee that up, Jim or Shano? George W. Bush's State of the Union address where he says he's going to pay off all of the national debt with the money left over to him by Bill Clinton because he raised taxes on rich people 3%, one that without a single Republican vote, not one Republican vote. And this is what George Bush said 2 months after he came into office.
Many of you have talked about the need to pay down our national debt. I listened, and I agree. We owe it to our children and grandchildren to act now. And I hope you will join me to pay down $2 trillion in debt during the next 10 years. At the end of those 10 years, we'll have paid down all the debt.
All of the debt that is available to be paid down is basically what he said. That was how it wrapped. And, you know, George W. Bush saying, I'm going to pay down all the debt. I got all this money that Bill Clinton left me. Without one Republican vote. And Romney wants to double down on George W. Bush's policies? I mean, that debt, all that surplus that was going to be used to pay down the national debt, that George Bush was going to use to pay down the national debt, which at that point was, you know, probably around $5 or $6 trillion, because George Bush added $5 trillion to the national debt. With his two wars and his Medicare Part D and his massive tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. Mitt Romney is going to double down on that. He wants to drop his own tax rate. Because he only pays capital gains, so he pays a maximum 15% income tax, which is why he paid 13.9% year before left. He wants to drop that down to nothing. Paul Ryan's budget would cause Mitt Romney to pay 1% in income taxes, federal income taxes. 1%. And this guy is lecturing people who are working at Walmart who aren't making enough money to pay income taxes? Give me a break. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And when we come back, I'm going to tell you how this all got started, and you're going to hear from the lady behind it all.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you, and I don't like how you've been treating my star.
Yes, indeed, my friends. We are taking our country back one congressional district at a time. And Jim Graves, we're featuring in our Taking My Country Back segment, which we're going to be doing periodically from now right up into the election. We're featuring people that you might want to be helping out, you might certainly want to know about, who are running for political office, anything from dog catcher to president of the United, well, not president, but the U.S. Senator, the House of Representatives. And Jim Graves is our guest for today, our Taking My Country Back. His website, Jim Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S, jimgraves.com. He's a native Minnesotan and a hotelier, or a hotelier if you're using English. Anglicized English, running for Congress. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
Tell me about the district in which you are running.
Well, the district is a kind of a rural, suburban kind of district. It's filled with a lot of good people, a lot of hardworking people, people that are struggling right now to make ends meet, but the good, decent people, and I'm finding them to be very, very open to change. They're looking for somebody that can represent them, that will serve them and not serve themselves like Michelle Bachmann does. They're looking for somebody that's actually going to go out and try to make a difference, not make a statement like Michelle Bachmann does. You know, the same old, same old.
Yeah.
They really want somebody there to help them because they need help. They need representation. They need to get that working class back working again.
So you're the guy who is running against Michelle Bachmann to take her congressional seat back and for all of us rather than just the 1% and the Fox News viewers.
That's right. I'm the guy that's going to go out there and get the job done.
JimGraves.com is the website, JimGraves.com. I had that right, Jim?
Yeah, okay. JimGraves.com,
great.
Yep.
So what's your platform?
Well, the platform basically is, let's face the facts, it's a middle class, it's the livable wage job earner that actually creates the jobs and keeps this economy going, and those people are diminishing as rapidly as we've ever seen in the history of America. And if the middle class goes, so goes the country. So I'm there for the people of the district that are working hard, getting up every morning, looking for a decent integrity and that kind of thing at the workplace, a livable wage job. And I'm going to work very, very hard round the clock. I'm going to represent the people, not myself. I'm going to go and try to create jobs, good livable wage jobs, not create headlines like Michelle Bachmann does. So
right. There's
a big difference. My platform is to be honest, to be straightforward, to be facts-based, don't bend the truth, don't go out to serve my own political agenda, don't make pledges to Grover Norquist or anybody else, just pledge to the people that I'm going to work day and night for them. I'm giving up my other job, my other life, it was a pretty good life, to really serve people, and I think I want to give back. I know I want to give back, and I want to do it in the realm of stewardship. I've been blessed. Now it's my time to work for all the people that have, you know, made my life so good.
What is your other job?
Well, I'm a hotel guy and a developer. I've developed a lot of real estate and hotel, over 115 projects, created over 5,000 jobs. Now, I use that when I say create jobs, Tom. We all know that the middle class is really the job creator, not business.
Oh, but, yeah.
I mean,
when business people like you and I hire people, we do so because it makes us more money.
Well, exactly. Actually, at the end of the day, we need what we call that aggregate demand. We need people coming to our businesses and what have you, buying our goods and services with cash in their pocket. Mm-hmm. Right now, families are stressed. People are stressed. Their home mortgages are upside down. The wages have actually been dropping, real wages against inflation.
Yeah.
People are struggling. So I'm going to be there for those folks. I've been fortunate. I have a lot of union labor working for me in my hotels. And I build a lot of projects with union labor. And I know that it's a big myth that labor and business have mutually exclusive needs.
Yeah.
We both have the same needs. We have mutually beneficial needs. We come together. And so in my business, I provide goods and services to folks that have money in their pockets. So I like to pay people well. They can come back and enjoy our services. And that's what we need in this America economy. We need people that can actually get involved and partake.
Jim Graves, I'm curious. Jim Graves is running for Congress in Minnesota's 6th District, which is the district currently represented by Michelle Bachmann, and he's a native Minnesotan and developer and hotel runner running for Congress. JimGraves.com, the website, the Twitter is Graves4Congress. And Jim, I'm curious your thoughts on Mitt Romney saying that his job is to ignore basically 47% of America.
Wow, you talk about putting your silver spoon in your mouth, or I should say your foot.
Yeah.
He forgot what America is all about. It's all about people. It's all about all of us, the collective good, all working together to make this country great. And apparently he thinks 47 of us are freeloaders. He should get off his palace throne and get out and see the people.
Yeah.
There's people up and down the byways in my district that are working very, very hard. And that's an insult to injury to be saying that they're just freeloaders. I mean,
He threw everybody who's on Social Security into that category, or at least everybody whose Social Security is low enough that they don't pay income tax on it. He threw, all the people working at Walmart. I mean, what's amazing to me, Jim, is that I'm sure in your district, there are a lot of people who are low income people who have Romney yard signs in their front yards. You know, it's that poor white working class folks who the Republican Party has depended on because they've always been able to bamboozle them, or at least they've been able to bamboozle them since Reagan. And now Romney has come right out and said, no, we don't care about those people.
You know, it hurts, Tom. It just hurts that we have to divide people again. It's divisiveness.
Yeah.
I don't care about Romney so much. I just hate comments like that when you divide the country in half and you say half of the people are providing updraft, the other are taking downdraft. I mean, we're in this together. I mean, there's freeloaders out there. Sure, there's people bilking the system. We saw that happen on Wall Street too.
Yes.
Both sides of the aisle have, and both sides of the equation have freeloaders. But for the most part, Americans are hardworking people that are trying to make ends meet, and we don't need to divide people to conquer. We can bring people together and conquer, and we could all win.
Yeah, very well said. Jim Graves, jimgraves.com, the website. They're running for Congress in the seat in the district that is currently being represented by, get ready for the shutter here, Michelle Bachmann. Jim Graves, I wish you the very best. jimgraves.com is the website. Check it out. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Tom, so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Okay, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about Ayn Rand and the influence she's had on America, on Paul Ryan, and on Mitt Romney and his millionaire and billionaire buddies, and take your calls. And Mitt Romney is not just saying, 47% of American workers are worthy of being trashed because they don't earn enough to pay federal income taxes. Actually, there's a fairly good breakout of this. Pat Garofalo wrote it over at the Center for American Progress's thinkprogress.org blog, What Romney Won't Tell You About the 47%. And this is really remarkable. Of that 47%, 44% of them are people who are on Social Security. They basically get elderly tax benefits, 44%. 30% of them are getting child credits for the working poor. So they're people who are working and are making so little money that the child credits, which, by the way, were passed by Reagan, although he had a Democratic Congress, that those child credits are zeroing out their tax rates. So that's almost 75. That's almost three quarters of all of them right there. It's the elderly and the working poor. And then you got 5% with itemized deductions. That's basically, that's the 3,000 multimillionaires and billionaires who paid no income taxes last year. 5.6% getting education credits to zero out their taxes. In other words, they're making just a little bit more than what you have to make to pay income tax, federal income taxes, but they're also putting their kids through school. 1.3% don't pay any income taxes because they have capital gains and dividend rates. This is how Mitt Romney doesn't pay income taxes. It's really pretty mind-boggling. And on top of that, Romney is like dreaming of the days of his father and his grandfather. His great-grandfather, of course, moved from Utah down to Mexico so that they could have a polygamous compound down there, so he could have his multiple wives, because that's what good Mormons did back in the 19th century when Utah voted in, I think it was 1890, to make polygamy illegal. And then he stayed down there, and his dad was born down in Mexico, which raises the interesting question, how could his dad run for president? Well, apparently there's different standards if you're a white guy than if you're a black guy. Like, nobody, when Mitt Romney Sr. was running, or George Romney, excuse me, when George Romney was running for president of the United States, he was born in Mexico. Nobody even raised the issue. Why? He's a white guy. That should tell you something. But anyhow, Mitt wasn't born in Mexico. His dad was. And so he's making this joke about how, and Jesus, if my dad had just stayed in Mexico, I could have been born down there and I could call myself a Latino. And then I get a lot more votes. Yeah, Mitt. That's a good one. Cora in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Cora, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was just thinking that Mitt Romney has been consistent in one thing. He thinks he can buy his way into everything. You know, he's
well, he has all his life.
Yeah, he doesn't want to put an effort into it. So, I mean, the wife is put in a really crappy apartment. The dog is on the roof of the car. Let Detroit fail. You know, let the foreclosures happen quickly. And then this is the big thing. The Palestinians don't want peace, and they're basically homeless, worthless people that do not have a good ethos. Therefore, they cannot better themselves. So let's don't bother with the Palestinians.
Right.
And he just lumped 47% of the Americans in that same category.
Right. Yeah. This is the guy who wants to be president of all of us and who wants to sit in the chair that Jimmy Carter, who damn near brought peace to the Middle East. I mean, he was within just, you know, throwing distance of it. And had he got a second term, had Ronald Reagan's campaign manager, Bill Casey, not cut that deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages until the minute that Ronald Reagan put his hand on the Bible, that minute was the minute that they released the hostages. Had Bill Casey not cut that deal with the Iranians, Jimmy Carter would have gotten a second term, and I believe we would have seen a complete peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and three-quarters of the disturbances that we're seeing in the Muslim world anyway right now would not be happening. But, yeah, very, very well said, Cora. Thank you very much. Thanks for the call. Tony in Stafford, Virginia. Hey, Tony, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
It's about the taxes. I always was under the impression that all employers had to withhold income tax from your checks.
I don't know. None of my I don't do the payroll for my company,
cash,
so I don't know.
Cash.
I don't think any of my employees make so little that we wouldn't, although yeah. We do have a couple
well,
of part-time. I just don't know. I know everybody has to withhold, you know, you have to withhold payroll taxes.
Yeah, but look at a waitress. They make, in Virginia here, something like $230 an hour.
Right.
But then they have to report how much they made in tips, and a lot of times they're walking out of there at the end of the week with zero.
Yeah.
Because everything was eaten up by tax. And also about the income tax, ain't that the standard deduction adjusted for inflation?
Yes.
So if wages are stagnant, more people are going to not be paying income tax.
Well, the fact of the matter is that if you go back to the Clinton years, it was about 34-35% of Americans were earning so little or were on Social Security. Keep in mind, that's about half of them. About half of them are on Social Security, and about half of them, so about 15%, were earning so little that they didn't pay federal income taxes. And that 30, you know, in the 30s, percent stood right up until the Bush recession. And then when the economy started to fall in 2007 and when it really went into the free fall in 2008, that's when you saw those numbers cross the 40% threshold. And we're now at 47% because we're in the middle of a Great Depression, the Bush Great Depression. I mean, you know, let's call it what it is. And as soon as America gets back to work, and I frankly think that's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years, I think we may have another big clunk or thump before then. We'll see, but whether we do or not, I still think that, you know, within 6 or 7 years from now, we will be back on our feet solidly and growing. And when we are, you're going to see that number back down around 30%. And if we raise the minimum wage up to $10, $11, $12, $13 an hour, you'd see that number drop down to 15 or 20%, and it would just be people who are old enough that their income is Social Security, and they make a little enough on it that they're not paying taxes on it, even though Ronald Reagan started taxing Social Security benefits. So, Tony, you're absolutely right. Thank you. Well said. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Well, you just covered it, but you know, I listened to Democracy Now! This morning, and they were the only news outlet that I listened to that also included the comment about Latinos, you know, that he would, if he was, from a Latino background, that he would have a better shot at the White House. And that is very insulting to a lot of Latinos. I'm originally from New Mexico. My sister-in-law is a Mexican. That was born in Arizona. Her father was an immigrant, and he did not get very many chances. He had to work doubly hard at everything he did. And, you know, they just, like MSNBC, National Public Radio, you know, gave a free ride on that because they edited that out. And I've called and complained about it, and I urge people to talk to MSNBC and say, why is it that you have not included that in that Mother Jones piece?
Right. Here it is right here. This Shane's got this thing pulled out. Here it is.
Mike, here it is. My dad, you probably know, was the governor of Michigan and was the head of a car company, but he was born in Mexico. And had he been born of Mexican parents, I'd have a better shot of winning this, but he was not. He was living in Mexico. He lived there for a number of years. And, I say that jokingly, but it would be helpful to be Latino.
It would help me a lot to be Latino. Right. John, well said, well pointed out. Bob, hang on just a second here. Bob in Brooklyn, New York, listening on WWRL. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. Yeah, you mentioned Ronald Reagan. I have some information about Reagan, if I may. If I could just say one quick thing about Romney, though. I mean, there are people who are in the 10% tax bracket right now who get no benefits from the government and pay a lot of federal tax.
Right.
So I don't know what he's talking about. And, of course, the Republicans will raise taxes on most people by eliminating deductions for things like, you know, property tax, medical expenses, premiums on health insurance. So,
Paul Ryan wants to get rid of all those. If you got rid of all of those so-called loopholes, you still couldn't balance the budget without raising taxes on rich people, which, you know, Ryan and Romney swear they're not going to do. And your point is really well taken. Even somebody working part-time, even somebody making $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year, working part-time as a greeter at Walmart, 100% of their income is taxed with the payroll tax. And that's why, and the income tax is what only kicks in when you start making serious bucks. And that's why the Republicans always say,
47% of Americans pay no income taxes.
Now, sometimes they lie and say pay no taxes. That's just a flat out lie. But, you know, these are the numbers that Limbaugh and these other right wing wackadoodles have been throwing around for years.
Yeah, they're going to hurt the people who can least afford it. They're going to raise their taxes. I mean, I actually called about Reagan. Can you hear about that?
Sure, yeah. We got about 40 seconds here. It's all yours.
Oh, well, listen. Ronald Reagan was the biggest hypocrite in the world because when he was president, his administration supported some of the biggest spending boondoggles. Here in New York, they supported the Westway Project. This was an enormous boondoggle to build a real estate development and highway project. Mm. Reagan was there in a newspaper with a hard hat and a big goofy smile on his face. They supported something called, there was another scandal here. WedTech.
Mm-hmm.
His administration was rigging government contracts to give it to a small company in the Bronx.
Right.
And there were friends of Ed Meese that were on the payroll there.
Of course. And let us not forget Star Wars. You know, $1 trillion to his buddies in the defense industry, the military industrial complex that Dwight Eisenhower warned us about. Bob, spot on. Thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WWRL. We'll be back 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
How is it that working poor people who call themselves Republicans, who just got kicked in the teeth by Mitt Romney, are going to continue to support Republicans?
Scraping up my own ass lip just to get some gas. Baby, welcome to the lower half of the middle class.
Oh, by the way, speaking of gas, Saudi Arabia just announced that they are willing to throw some more oil into the world oil pool because they're concerned that high oil prices might be stifling the growth of the worldwide economy, which will, of course, hurt Saudi Arabia. Very interesting. Very interesting to see the international geopolitics of all this, you know, of oil. That's a breaking headline on Financial Times website. Dean in Salem, Oregon, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Dean, what's up?
Hi, full disclosure, I'm coordinating editor for Occupy Oregon Media Group and Pacific Northwest editor for the new International Collaborative Media Alliance.
Well, good on you.
I work with Mark Taylor Canfield.
He's a good guy.
Yes, he is. He's an excellent example of an activist who can also be a journalist.
Yep.
A couple of things. David Brooks wrote a column on this whole issue you're talking about today about Romney's 47%.
Yeah, for the New York Times.
He pointed out that a chunk of that number is actually from Romney's own base. I've heard some people, although I haven't authenticated it, estimate that's 10% of that 47%. National Public Radio ran a story yesterday in which they said, well, it's actually 46%. So a different analysis gives us 36% Democrat, 10% possibly 10% Republican, and it just changes the equation a little bit.
Well, I would say that probably half to two-thirds of that 40%, 47%, first of all, the number of multimillionaires and billionaires who pay zero in income taxes is in the four digits or very low five digits. In other words, the best guesses I've seen are between 3,000 and 10,000 people. So it's a small number of people that probably accounts for 1 or 2% of that 47%. So,
yeah.
Number one. But secondly, think of the Republican Party and who votes Republican. The Republican
exactly.
Party has a lot of older people voting Republican, and those are in that 47% because they're mm-hmm. on Social Security, and therefore they're not paying federal income taxes. And the Republican Party has a lot of the working poor. I lived in Vermont during the 2004 election. And I remember Louise and I driving around the state. And Vermont is it's a rural state, and it's a very poor state, actually. I mean, there's a fair amount of money in Burlington and Montpelier in the big city. I mean, Montpelier is a big city of 7,000 people, and Burlington's a big city of 35,000 people. But, you know, you get out in the countryside, and there's a lot of people living in mobile homes or in houses that you might describe as shacks. And what was astounding to me is how many of them had Bush signs out in their front yard, you know, Bush Cheney signs in their front yard. These people who are literally living, making their livings, sharpening chainsaws in the season, right? I mean, that's, you know, their total income might be $5,000 or $6,000 a year. They hunt for meat because they literally need the food, and they're voting Republican. So I would say that 47% that Romney just dismissed, probably three quarters of them vote Republican. Because it's the working poor, it's the old Reagan Democrats, and it's the elderly many of the elderly who continue to vote Republican because they've been fooled by these guys all these years.
Well, so, David Brooks was making that point, and I haven't verified the exact number, but a chunk of that, I'll go with the NPR number of 46%, are from Romney's own base.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that he is shooting himself in the foot by promoting these numbers. Although, you know, he, like Republicans always do, he is confident. He is relying on voter ignorance. He's relying on the fact that Fox is not going to inform these people of this. Many of these people watch nothing but Fox, or they get their information from right wing talk radio. And of course, right wing talk radio isn't going to tell them either. And many of them just are low information voters, or they're so busy because they're working five jobs or three jobs. I mean, literally three jobs. That they don't have the time. They don't have, to pay attention to what's actually going on in the world. Dean, thanks for the call. Well said. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up? Corky? No, Corky. Okay, let's go to Laurel in Atlanta, Georgia. Do I have that right? Was she on Sirius?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome.
I live in a right to work for less state, and I'm trying to make it purple every day.
Yeah, I lived in Atlanta for 13 years. I know it well.
Yeah, I was wondering, I don't hear a lot about the article from Brigham Young's great-granddaughter about why she left the church and why she says that Mitt Romney lies, and basically it's okay to lie if you're trying to improve your position and, you know, whatever, you got to basically do whatever you got to do. Which is what I think, why it seems he's talking out of both sides of his.
Well, this, you know, there's a long time, and the caller just dropped. I didn't drop you. I don't know what happened, but there is a long tradition, both in religion and in politics, of what's called the virtuous lie, right? The white lie, the lie that helps you get to a good. That is better than that outweighs the sin of the lie. And you know, the Republicans have been playing this game for a long, long time. You know, oh yeah, we'll tell this small lie and it'll cause people to then vote for us so that we can then do a good work, right? A really noble work. Like, America will be the great country if we just turn Social Security over to the billionaires on Wall Street. America will be a much better country if we just take all that Medicare money, those trillions of dollars that are spent on Medicare every year, and we hand that over to UnitedHealthcare so that their CEO can make an extra $1 billion. America will be a better country if we just did away with unemployment insurance. I mean, the Republicans tried to do this. The reason why our credit got downgraded was because the Republicans wouldn't raise the debt ceiling. What did Barack Obama have to give them to get them to raise the debt ceiling? He had to cut the number of weeks that you could be on extended unemployment, federal support for unemployment. He had to cut the number of weeks you could get unemployment from 99 weeks. And this is during a time when people were already at 99 weeks and rolling over into zero, right? Into nothing. No income. He had to cut that from 99 weeks down to 74 weeks to satisfy the Republican demand. The Republicans would like there to be no unemployment. And they, you know, some of these guys, there's this small percentage of them, the Paul Ryans of the world, who I think are genuine true believers. They've read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. They think that if all the billionaires went on strike, somehow America would fall apart. Frankly, I think if all the billionaires went on strike and they all went off and lived in Hawaii or something, that it would open up lots and lots of opportunities for entrepreneurs, you know, like me, and people who have not been entrepreneurs in their life would become entrepreneurs. And boy, you would see a renaissance in America like you never saw. But Paul Ryan doesn't see it that way, and he's afraid that the billionaires might go on strike. So give them whatever they want, right? Especially Mitt. We'll be back. It's 58 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, poor Mark Letter, the guy who was hosting Mitt Romney's fundraiser, shall we call it, where Romney kind of put his silver foot in his mouth. Mark is the guy who had previously hosted the sex party in the Hamptons, where they had nude Russian women dancing and people having sex and naked by the pool, and it was all the talk of the social circles. Oh, that incredible stuff that the 54% do, or the 53%. Peter Ferrara is on the line with us. He is the policy director of the Carlson Center for Public Policy, an attorney, and the author of America's Ticking Bankruptcy Bomb, the website theccpp.org. Do I have that right, Peter?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, great. Welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
So, in a way, didn't Mitt Romney, by saying that his job is to not worry or to basically not represent the 47% of Americans, about half of whom are on Social Security and so they pay no federal income taxes, and about half of whom are working at Walmart or working other jobs, working at Staples, and they make so little that they're not in the tax bracket where they pay income taxes. Didn't he basically say to them that they could just go screw themselves and abandon the whole pretense of Reaganomics and trickle-down economics? It used to be Reagan said to people like that, people who didn't have a lot of income, said, you know, we just need to, you know, cut taxes for the billionaires and it'll trickle down. Don't worry. It'll fall off the edge of the table for you.
That 47% was the result of 30 years of Reaganomics, because it was the result of Reagan and his Republicans cutting tax rates for what you define as the working class and for the middle class that produced that result. And so that is why by 2009, the bottom 40% of income earners were paying no income taxes and the middle 20% was paying only 2.7%.
Well, you know what the numbers were in 2008, Peter.
This is 2009.
Right, I'm saying in 2008, do you know what the numbers were before the Bush Depression happened?
In 2007, the top, the bottom 40% paid no federal income tax, and the middle 20% paid four.
It was.
Let me tell you. Let me just finish the point. The middle 20% paid 4.7% in 2007, and by 2009, the middle 20% paid 2.9%.
Okay.
And so it was 30 years of Reaganomics. They cut the tax rate, starting all the way with the earned income tax credit, which was originally Reagan's idea. That came out of his testimony. Before
passed by a Democratic Congress.
Passed by Democratic Congress, yes, but it originally started before Russell Long, Senate Finance Committee. Reagan testified. He proposed the earned income tax credit as a way of offsetting payroll taxes on poor people. For him, it was an alternative to welfare, eliminate taxes on the poor. And that started that, but then it continued 30 years. Reagan cut the tax rate on everybody, including the lower income people. He doubled the personal exemption, which benefits the lower income people more. That was extended with the child tax credit during the Gingrich years. And Bush then made the child tax credit refundable. He cut the bottom rate by 33%. And so it was all these tax cuts during the Reagan years on the lower-income workers as well as the higher-income workers that resulted in the bottom 47% not paying any income taxes at all.
And massive massive
that
deficits.
I supported over all those years.
And massive deficits. But that doesn't, you know, that may or may not be the case, Peter, and we can slice and dice those things all day long. And I'm perfectly willing to just not even dispute your numbers. The point is that Romney basically said, my job is not to pay attention to that 47% who don't pay federal income tax. Now, all of them who are working, the ones who are retired maybe are not paying payroll taxes, but all of them who are working, even the ones working at Staples or Walmart, they're paying the federal payroll tax, and they're paying state taxes, and they're paying sales taxes, and they're paying gasoline taxes. But Romney says, not my job to care about those people. Don't you think that that's a fundamental problem, or does that genuinely reflect how you guys on the right view low-income people?
He said that politically that wasn't part of his strategy. Now, that's a stupid strategy, because the people in the bottom 47% want jobs. They don't want welfare. And so he should be pitching to the bottom 47% to create economic growth and prosperity so they can get jobs, rising wages, and rising income. So it was a very stupid strategy, and it was a stupid position. Now, notice that in his tax plan, he does not raise taxes on that bottom 47%. So that is positive. And also, the Republicans and the conservatives across the board all support the continuance and maintenance of safety nets. So that's not a dispute in the country. You're misleading people when you say that's part of the debate.
Well, Paul Ryan, George W. Bush in 2005 tried to convert Social Security into a totally Wall Street-run program rather than a government-run program. He said that the political capital he got from having a war in Iraq was going to get him that. He said that back in 99. He did it. He tried. He failed.
I'm the guy who worked with Paul Ryan to introduce a bill precisely to carry out the personal accounts for Social Security. In that bill, we kept the government guarantee that you would get at least the benefits promised by Social Security. So it maintained...
If you were of a certain age.
No, that was across the board, all ages. And that in all the bills I work on, that's... And you have that in Chile, too. There's a continued guaranteed benefit for the personal accounts. So I've always advocated maintaining the Social Security safety net for the personal account, and Ryan's reforms all maintain Medicare, maintain Medicaid. In fact,
how can you maintain Social Security when you're turning trillions of dollars of the Social Security trust fund over to, these hustlers on Wall Street? How can you maintain that?
With the personal accounts, the standard long-term market returns, they would get higher benefits, not lower benefits.
So you just have to hope that you're one of those people who retires when the stock market is at a peak rather than a valley.
No, because you still have the guarantee that you'll get at least what Social Security promises you.
So how can you do that? It sounds like you're saying chicken in every pot.
The reason you can do that is because everybody's going to end up most likely with much higher benefits. So
people are paying more into it?
No, because the returns are higher. When you actually, a lifetime of savings investment will always give you more than a lifetime of no savings investment.
So you're basing all of your math on this, on the assumption that the stock market is always going to go up.
Well, the stock market has always gone up over the long run, but the point is that you still have a social safety net in place, no matter what.
How can
I have long advocated, let me explain it this way. Since I have long advocated that you're going to get much higher returns and benefits from savings and a lifetime of savings investment in these personal accounts, then why don't I just go ahead and guarantee everybody that you'll get at least
how do you account? How do you cover that third of Social Security recipients who didn't pay into it for a lifetime, who paid into it for maybe nothing. They were born with birth defects or paid into it for 3 years and both their parents died in a car accident, or they paid into it for 5 years and in their 20s they broke their neck. How do you account for that one third of Social Security recipients who are living on Social Security disability?
Well, because you have disability insurance as part of the personal accounts. That's what they have in Chile. See, all the benefits are covered.
Well, the program in Chile is blowing up, Peter. It's melting down.
No, it's not melting down. It's actually, Chile's becoming a first world country and is demonstrating to the world how to become a first world country. And fundamental to that is all the increased
and they're doing away with the private
accounts. All the savings and investment from these personal accounts, which promotes economic growth and prosperity and helps to promote Chile becoming a first world country, which is what it's going to do. And so it's pro-growth, it's pro-worker.
They're abandoning Chile has abandoned their personal accounts, and they've gone back to government-funded programs, Peter.
Now,
you know this.
That's false. That's completely false. It's a fairy tale. And it's pension fund socialism. Tom, you should be for this because the workers then own all the businesses.
So you want to force workers to give money to Wall Street?
We're not forcing workers to do anything. It's an individual choice by each worker.
So
if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it.
So if you don't pay into it, then you don't get that retirement.
Well, you still get Social Security.
Oh, so you want to force people to pay into Social Security?
Yes, I will force people to pay into Social Security or the personal account. That is the policy. That was in the bill that we introduced in 2004 and 2005.
I am increasingly baffled, but I'll leave it at that, Peter. It's one of the few times we haven't ended up shouting at each other. And I'm pleased to hear you say, you know, a lot of Republicans now are pointing out that, you know, Romney's statement was just really dumb because there's a lot of poor people who vote Republican. They don't know why, but they do. And you're right. Peter Ferrara, theccpp.org is the website. Thank you, Peter.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, that was interesting. We'll be back. How's Mitt Romney going to survive this thing? Will he? Will it actually help him? Rocky Mountain Mike, yeah. What a great song. That is great. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Ruben in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Ruben, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
I put a sign in my front yard saying that we are the 47%.
Ha! The proud 47%.
That Romney don't care about.
There you go.
And,
well, you know, some of Romney's friends, his multimillionaire and billionaire buddies, of the 400 richest people in America, the Forbes 400, 100 of them paid no federal income tax last year. So they're part of the 47% too.
But I told the Republican friends of mine that I'm a 47%er, but I pay federal, state, local, sales, and property taxes.
Yeah.
And if I'm paying all these property taxes, I expect some services for my taxes.
Yeah.
You know, they tell me that we shouldn't expect any services or benefits for all these taxes that we pay. And I said, no, it's like going to a restaurant and order a meal, then you don't get the meal.
Yeah,
you pay
there you go. No, they want you paying the taxes, the local sales tax and real estate tax and all the property tax, all these other taxes, so that they can have their tax cuts for their millionaires and billionaires. And so 100 of the 400 richest Americans can pay no income taxes at all and become part of the 47%. But that's great, Ruben. You've got a sign out there that says I'm a part of the proud 47%. That is great. Congratulations. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for sharing that with us. Mary in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Mary, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Actually, I was calling because I am one of the 47%.
Okay. Is that because you're retired or because you're low income?
Well, actually, I worked 34 years as a nurse, and I'm retired. I got my pension, and I will take early Social Security.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think I am entitled to my pension and Social Security.
Well, you paid into it for 30-some-odd years, didn't you?
And I also get upset because, you know, I'm a nurse. And the inside traders and all these people that work with computers and push buttons and make money, they get sick. And so they need us.
Yep.
And they think so little of us that they don't pay us as they should. But when they get sick, oh, boy, should we be there at their side helping them get better.
Yeah.
And their family. And I don't think they give people credit enough also for, you know, the services that the lower income and people provide.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the people that clean up after their kids at school and clean the bathrooms and stuff. I mean, they take all of this for granted.
Yep.
And it gets, you know, it just gets really sad that people don't appreciate other people's skills.
I agree.
When a catastrophe comes, my skills might end up being more important than that of the person who runs the computer and doesn't have an electricity.
Right. The hedge fund manager is not going to be able to save a life. You have saved many lives in your life, I'm sure. And Mary, I think that you know, there was a time in America when if you were rich, there was an obligation that went along with it. The Kennedy family, I think, really is emblematic of that. John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Joe Kennedy, you know, joined the army during World War II and died in World War II, the oldest of the Kennedy brothers. And not Joe Sr., but Joe Jr. And then his next brother, John, became president of the United States, and Robert. You know, I mean, we all know the story, and Teddy. And all of them were inculcated by both their father and their mother with this idea that you are blessed. You were born a multimillionaire. Therefore, it's really a variation on noblesse oblige, the idea that the royalty has an obligation to help people who are less well off than them, simply by virtue of the fact that they're the royalty, that they're wealthy. And the Kennedys got that. And that's one of the reasons, I think. And Franklin Roosevelt got that. He was a very wealthy guy. And he got it as well. And Teddy Roosevelt got it. I mean, for a long time in America, there was this concept of noblesse oblige. And it's been replaced since Reagan with the I got mine, screw you mentality that has become the pervasive part of the one percenters. And it's just, yeah. It is absolutely tragic. Mary, thank you for the call, and thank you for your service to your nation as a nurse. It's genuine service, and it's hard work, and I salute you for it. Thank you. John in New York City, listening on WWRL. John, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, doing better yet?
Yeah, I'm getting there, step by step.
All right. I just thought that, you know, President Obama and the Democrats are forgetting one point about taxes, and that's that it's your patriotic duty to pay taxes, and to defer from paying taxes is unpatriotic.
Yeah. Yeah, taxes are the price of admission to a civil society. I continually forget who said that. It's one of our, you know, minor politicians and philosophers, but a name that you'd recognize. But taxes are the cost of admission to a civil society. And Mitt Romney thinks taxes are something that, you know, little people, what was it, Leona Helmsley said, you know, only little people pay taxes, right? And you are so right, John, so well said. Thank you very much. Thurston in Queens, New York, listening on WWRL. Hey, Thurston, what's up?
Thanks, Tom. I'll be as brief as possible. I am a Latino, Hispanic, however people want to refer. My parents are from South America,
mm-hmm.
Colombia, and I was born in Queens, New York,
mm-hmm.
raised, lived here my entire life.
So are you of Hispanic or Latino ancestry?
Yes, exactly.
And did Mitt Romney manage to upset you?
You know, I am incredibly offended by his statements. I mean, let me just put it this way, briefly, like I said. Since about the age of 14, I, here in New York City, have been stopped by the police. Told I fit a description, asked where I'm going,
yep.
Illegally searched. This is the kind of stuff that I think most people in the country don't really have to go through.
Well, most white people in the country don't have to go through,
yeah,
but African Americans and Latinos and you know, people of color and now increasingly people who look like maybe they're from the Middle East go through this regularly, routinely. You're absolutely right, Thurston. I'm sorry that we hit the break here. I would have liked to have heard more of your story, but thank you very much for the call and for sharing what you did with us. I appreciate it. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back right after this opportunity for you to support your local station.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And thanks to Paul and Shano, they said it's Oliver Wendell Holmes who said taxes are the cost of admission or the price of admission to a civil society. Don't tell Romney. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. 34 minutes past the hour, actually. And just for a reminder, a couple of people have called or asked. Jim Graves is the name of the guy who is taking on Michelle Bachmann in her district in Minnesota. And his website is jimgraves.com. You can check it out and see what he's all about if you are interested. I'm curious. Actually, let me just... Well, I'll do it the next hour. I'll do it the next hour because our every single line to call in is totally slammed right now. And I know a lot of people want to get on and share their stories. But I do want to share with you the actual, you know, some of these actual clips of Romney, but more importantly, the actual clips of Ayn Rand back in the 1960s when she was talking to Mike Wallace about her philosophy, which is the philosophy, and I actually have a clip here of Paul Ryan talking about Ayn Rand. And so, you know, here's this direct line from us to Romney to Paul Ryan to Ayn Rand, and what does Ayn Rand really have to say? We'll get into that in the next hour, but for right now, let me pick up some of your stories here. Joe in San Bernardino. Hey, Joe, thanks for listening to the KPOJ.com stream. What's up?
Hi. I just wanted to say this guy, Peter, that you were just talking to.
Yeah.
It kind of drives me crazy because when he's talking about how the stock market always goes up.
Yeah.
Well, in 2007, I had back surgery, and I had to retire because it didn't work.
Right.
I wake up in pain. I go to bed in pain. And in between, if I'm lucky, I'm distracted from it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to cash in my 403B. I'm a retired teacher. Mm-hmm. And I lost, $50,000, $60,000 on it.
Wow.
And in the 3 weeks it took to process that, I lost another $5,000.
Because the market was falling so badly because of the Bush recession.
Exactly.
Wow.
And, I hear this guy, and it puts me into an absolute rage when he says, all you have to do is wait it out.
Yeah, that was my point to him is, what are you suggesting that people should have the good fortune of retiring when the market's high rather than when the market's low? And he's like, no, somehow magically it all evens out. And I don't get that math. I figured it was self-evident, but pardon?
Yeah, I just got hammered on that.
Yeah.
And, if it weren't for a defined benefit, retirement, I'd lose my home.
Yeah, and that's, the earlier generations knew the difference between defined benefit pension. What's a pension? What is Social Security? Social Security is a form of a pension, arguably, where you know exactly what you're going to get, and you're going to get that until the day you die, versus like a 401k, where whatever money you put in, that's what you get back, plus whatever it has made or lost, in your case, Joe. And once it's gone, and you got nothing. And if you live a little longer, problem, or not necessarily you, but some other person.
Well, fortunately, my wife is still working, and if it weren't for that, I'd be in serious trouble.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your difficulties, Joe, and that you were one of the many people who got ripped off. I mean, it was we had the middle class in America lost somewhere between $4 and $7 trillion in the same 2 year period that the Fed was handing $14 trillion off to the banksters, and in during that same 2 year period. Those banksters on Wall Street, just the guys who work on Wall Street, just in New York City, took $150 billion with a B. That's $150,000 million as just bonuses, not even as their regular pay. And they took that.
Well, I look at it this way. Those guys in 3 weeks stole $5,000 from me.
Yeah.
And what did that do? That provided them their lifestyle for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, it might have paid for part of what's this guy, Riggs? No, Riggs is the new guy with the new super fund. But Mark Letterer is the guy at whose home Mitt Romney was videotaped making these comments. And Mark Letterer is the guy who before that had an orgy at his rented mansion in the Hamptons. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
so it might have paid for like an hour of his orgy.
That's kind of appalling from a person who's been with the same woman for 40 years.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I congratulate you for that too, Joe. I Louise and I will be hitting 40 years either next year or the year after. I can never keep it straight. But thank you very much, Joe, for the call. I appreciate it. David in Long Branch, New Jersey. Hey, David, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to Sirius XM.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Kind of a similar story to the previous caller. I great offense. I'm sick over the whole thing. I live on disability,
mm-hmm.
and this Archie Bunker mentality of that we're somehow taking advantage of the system. I live in constant pain. My entire cervical spine is fused from a car accident.
Ouch.
The money I get on disability pays my rent, my car insurance, and my $700 a month health insurance. And nothing else. I can't pay my electric bill. I can't pay my gas bill. So this thought that we are somehow living it up on the government tab, which, by the way, I paid into for 25 years, is just appalling.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see, you know, we should be talking about what we need to change in the system to help people rather than talking about how we need to disregard these people. You know, that, you know, the idea of being on disability, to me, the natural link is you must have a medical problem. Well, I have to wait 2 years, not from the time I was considered disabled, but from the time I started receiving disability benefits. I can't get onto Medicare until next June. So in the meantime, I'm paying $700 a month for medical insurance.
Wow.
And if I don't do that, my meds are $600 a month without insurance.
Wow. We really stick it to people who have fallen through the cracks, don't we, David?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't live on what we get, and we paid into a system that is failing us.
Yeah, that is absolutely tragic. And Mitt Romney wants to say, I'm not even going to be the president for those people. You know, we'll just be the president for the people who are making, you know, over $60,000 a year and you know, paying income tax. And I wonder if he...
I liked Obama's retort to it was that I'm a president for all the people.
Yes. And you would hope that Mitt Romney, you know, when he held his press conference after this came out, I was fully expecting him to say, you know, I misspoke or I said it badly. And really what I meant to say was I want to be the president for all the people. But instead, clip number two here, Shane, we've got Mitt Romney doubling down on his comment. Here's Mitt Romney. Thanks a lot for the call, by the way, David.
You're not stepping away from anything you said in this video, are you? You're not backing away from anything. And do you worry you've offended this 47% who you mentioned?
Well, you know, it's not elegantly stated. Let me put it that way. I'm speaking off the cuff in response to a question, and I'm sure I could state it more clearly and in a more effective way than I did in a setting like that. But well, it's a message which I'm going to carry and continue to carry, which is, look, the president's approach is attractive to people who aren't not paying taxes.
Right. So the president is the food stamp president. He's the welfare president. He's the people on Social Security president. He's the people on unemployment president. And those people are never going to vote for Mitt Romney. I'm telling you, Mitt Romney has never traveled in places like rural Vermont, where I used to live, or rural Georgia. You know, Louise and I lived in Atlanta for 13 years. I grew up in Michigan. I mean, you know, rural Michigan, or even Lansing. I mean, oh, well, George in Denver. Hey, George, thanks for listening to AM 760. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, one segment of the 47% that don't pay federal income taxes are couples with children. And
yes.
I wish
couples with children who are not earning a lot of money.
Well, you can look up, for example, on the earned income tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking it up right here. If you're married filing jointly, and you make $49,078, and you have three or more children, you'll get an earned income tax credit.
Right.
And of course, everybody who has kids, almost everybody, it might get phased out at some point, gets a $1,000 credit per child.
Right. So that puts you in the 47%.
Those are what?
So that throws you into the 47% that Romney says he's not representing.
It can very easily, because those are not deductions. Those are tax credits, and that'll zero out your tax liability very quickly.
Right.
And in fact, if you make around $22,000 or $23,000, I looked this up on TaxCaster. I don't have kids myself,
mm-hmm.
but I played around with it. And when we had the Make Work, remember we had also a credit that Obama passed, the Make Work Pay Work or whatever that was credit.
Right.
Oh, $800 per couple.
Yeah, it was it was an amplification of
Make Work Pay, I think.
You know, yeah, where the it was increasing the welfare to work thing.
Anyway, when I did TaxCaster, and that was a year or two ago, if you were making about $22,000 or $23,000, if you had three kids, with all those credits, you could get $8,000 from the government, and that would boost you up to $30,000. So I don't think Republicans. But first of all, you know the earned income tax credit was signed by Gerald Ford in 1975.
No, I didn't know that, but thank you for the information.
He signed it. That's Gerald Ford who signed it.
Of course, that was a Democratic Congress, because we had a Democratic Congress from 1948 until 1983.
That's true. But Ronald Reagan increased the credit that are earned income tax credit.
Right.
And you can make, it says here, you can make $5,751 on that tax credit. You put all those credits together, and you can make a pretty good amount of money, and you're not going to pay income tax. And I think David K. Johnston would be a good one to talk about this.
Yeah, we have had these conversations with David many times in the past, and he's a brilliant author. We'll be back. Thank you, George.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me that Mitt Romney actually is a political genius here. I think that there actually could be an argument to be made for it. I'll share it with you later.
I read the news today, oh boy.
Oh, let's check in on the news. By the way, David K. Johnston, somebody mentioned him in one of the earlier callers. He's going to be our Conversations with Great Minds on Friday on The Big Picture on our TV show, which is now available, by the way, in HD on Hulu at Hulu.com/The Big Picture, or just go on to Hulu.com and search for Big Picture. You can see our TV show, which is up, five nights a week. We do a one-hour program. This talk radio news service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at Don Siegelman, I before E, donsiegelman.org. Check it out. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Great to hear your voice. What's up?
Thank you. A judge has ruled today that police in Arizona can straight away start enforcing the most controversial section of that state's immigration law. So for the first time now, officers can carry out the requirement that cops, while they're enforcing other laws, can question or must question the immigration status of those suspected of being in the country illegally, what opponents call show me your papers.
Wow. Now, what level, what type of judge was this? Who was this judge?
This is U.S. District Judge Susan Bolton. Now, however, it's a milestone because it's a two-year legal battle, and it culminated in a U.S. Supreme Court decision in June that upheld the provision on the grounds it doesn't conflict with federal law, and it was sent back down to her, and this is what she's decided.
Wow. So is this the end of the road?
Well, as far as I can tell from what I've read, it literally seems to have just happened. And as far as I can see, I've not seen anything in the two pieces that I've read, and I've only seen the AP and Reuters, indicating any appeals to this.
Yeah, you would think not. If the Supreme Court bounces things back down to a lower court and the lower court rules, that tends to be where it stays. I understand that there was the Pennsylvania Supreme Court also came down with a ruling on voter suppression in Pennsylvania.
That's correct.
And they kicked it down, too.
They sent it back. They sent the case over the state strict voter ID law to a lower court. Now, the lower court must file its decision by October the 2nd, so very quickly. It's got to rule on whether the state can provide photo IDs to all eligible voters by election day.
Right.
And if the Commonwealth Court cannot prove that no voters will be disenfranchised, the decision said, the court must place a preliminary injunction on the law until after the election.
Right. And I'm guessing that they will not be able to prove that because they've never, finally in Florida, after spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars looking for, illegal voters, Rick Scott finally found this one guy, this gun nut who has a thick Austrian accent, who is a Canadian citizen, who registered to vote as an American and voted in the 2004 and 2008 elections, presumably voting his gun values. They found one illegal voter, and he was a Canadian. He wasn't even a Mexican.
Wow.
This has got to be just, a horrifying thing. And that's it. I mean, nationwide, they haven't found any illegal ones in Pennsylvania, to the best of my knowledge. They found one in Florida, and... So, in fact, I've got David Frum wrote a piece about it. The guy's name is Joseph Sever. He's 52 years old. And this is after they flagged 180,000 names. And they came across this guy along with six suspected cases. He was the only one that was actually an illegal voter.
And he wasn't a liberal.
Apparently not. He's let's see here. He admitted to lying about being a U.S. citizen, both to buy firearms, to obtain a concealed carry permit, and to vote. So we're not sure who he voted for, but he's seriously into weapons.
Wow. Well, in another court decision today, a federal appeals court today overturned a lower court decision that could have forced the disclosure of the donors behind some of the secret money groups flooding the airwaves with attack ads.
So Karl Rove won?
Basically, yes.
Hmm. Is there an appeal to that?
Yes. But
after the election, right?
After the election, correct.
Yeah.
And it says the SEC needs to clarify its rules.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Right. Well, the FEC and arguably could have clarified all this right at the get-go and just said, you know, you will do this or you won't do this, and it would have been in compliance with Citizens United, but with the Supreme Court ruling, which called out disclosure as the remedy for all this money. I mean, they came right out and said it, but nobody has at the FEC. I mean, the FEC is evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats, more or less. And so what do you get is a mess.
A mess.
Yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, what's the, it's been almost 24 hours since it really became a big media story, Mitt Romney dissing 47% of Americans. How's that playing out right now? I mean, I'm certainly hearing about it on the radio.
It's everywhere. I think it's going to become the topic of late night comics. There's been more released. There was more released this morning. His foreign policy ideas on the Palestinian-Israeli issue, where he doesn't really see a two-state solution. He doesn't see Middle East peace as a possibility. In fact, he trashed the Palestinians completely.
Hmm.
And then this afternoon, Mother Jones released the video in its entirety, and there's more in that. And then this afternoon, he's just sat down with Neil Cavuto, who I've read conflicting reports. One report I read said that he was very tough on him, and so I hope to see that shortly.
That should be fascinating. That should
yes.
be fascinating. But beyond that, I mean, just the fact that he's at this fundraiser given by a multimillionaire who has orgies, literally sex parties in his home, and Mitt Romney is there asking for money and saying 47% of America, it's his job to ignore them, basically.
That's right. He should not worry about them. They are victims, and this is not playing well on the street. People, reporters are taking it out and playing it to regular Americans. It's not playing well.
Yeah, this is going to be worse than the argument the conservatives made that Al Gore said that he invented the internet, which Al Gore, by the way, never said, but still, Fox News got a lot of mileage out of that phony baloney story, and it hurt Al Gore. This is going to, I think, hurt Romney far worse. You too? You agree?
I think this is bad for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Victoria Jones, thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
And check out donsiegelman.org, please.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, I told you I was going to get into this. I'm going to just dig into it a little bit just to share with you the origin of Mitt Romney's worldview, shall we say. Certainly Paul Ryan's worldview. Where all this came from. And the worldview of many of the people who were in the room at the home of that financier, that private equity, the pirate equity guy, who had based his company on the model of Bain Financial. Bain Financial's business model is basically you find a business that's doing okay. Say the business is worth $100 million. You borrow $100 million in the name of that company. You use that $100 million to buy the company, so you now own it, but it pays the $100 million back to the bank that you borrowed the money from. And to do that, it has to lay off a bunch of people or move its manufacturing, ship it overseas or whatever. Make a lot of profits really fast. And then when the company's finally paid off all the debt, and by the way, you get a big commission on the borrowing, you get a big commission on the sale. So no matter what happens, you're going to make a profit. And then when the company has paid off the debt, then you sell the company and you make $100 million on top of it. So you make, you know, $120, $140, $160 million on a $100 million company, whether you kill it or not. I mean, private equity, pirate equity is such a heads I win, tails you lose. And it is based on changes to the tax law that occurred in the second, third and fourth years of the Reagan administration. And that prior to that would have been a crime. The way Mitt Romney became rich would have been a felony before Ronald Reagan's presidency. And so he's holding this party, or he's holding this fundraiser at the home of this guy who has this Mark, what is Mark's last name? Hang on just a second. Mark, here we go. Letter, L-E-D-E-R. I'm assuming it's pronounced letter, M-A-R-C letter. This guy who has orgies in his home. Hires naked ladies to dance while people have sex around his pool. And then he invites Mitt Romney over, and Romney says what he has to say. So where did all this kind of stuff come from? How do these guys, where does this mindset of, you know, buy a company with debt from the bank, screw its employees horribly, just devastate its employees, do away with the pension, break the union, strip every penny you can out of that company, strip it down to the point where half the employees are left and they're doing twice as much work and they're working their butts off as hard as they possibly can to pay off the debt that you just dumped on that company. And then finally, when they do, then you sell the company again. Where did this, you know, just the mentality of pirate equity, where does this come from? This comes from a woman by the name of Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand was a Russian she was a little kid in the 1920s. She lived through the Russian Revolution, or the 19-teens. Her father owned a pharmacy, and I believe it was in St. Petersburg. And she lived through that revolution and was horrified by it. I mean, she literally saw her father's, her, this little family business that they had, taken over by the state. As was every business in the Soviet Union. Everything became owned by the people, which was basically the government. She went to university in Kiev and studied politics and of course, got an earful. And then came to the United States and decided that she wanted to become famous. She wanted to be a star. So she wrote some really terrible novels. I mean, like The Fountainhead. And this novel, this woman gets raped and likes it. Right? I mean, this is Ayn Rand's contribution to great literature. And Atlas Shrugged. You don't have to read the 1,000 pages. I'll tell you the storyline. It's really simple. The billionaires are really upset with the unions and the government bureaucrats who are making life hard for them. Because they are insisting that the billionaires, and by the way, it's a brother and sister who inherited the railroad and all the money from their father. So it's not even people who worked for their money. It's inherited wealth. And so they in order to just show how important they are, they all go on strike. All the billionaires, they just start disappearing from all over America. And they've all gone off to some island someplace, along with John Galt, who has started this revolution. And once the billionaires have left, the country falls apart. Because the bureaucrats don't know how to do anything, and the union people don't know how to do anything. They don't know how to run a business, and so the country falls apart. That's the story of Atlas Shrugged. And finally, all the people are begging the billionaires to come back and run their businesses once again. It's stupid. But the billionaires liked it a lot. It's one of the reasons why the Koch brothers, in some of the university chairs that they funded, they've required that those university professors, particularly in economics, give away copies of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. It's a book about the billionaires as heroes. So here in clip three, Shano, this is Mike Wallace interviewing Ayn Rand back in the mid-60s. And she just basically lays out her philosophy. And he says what he says, and she says what she says, and you can make up your own mind.
You are out to destroy almost every edifice in the contemporary American way of life, our Judeo-Christian religion, our modified government-regulated capitalism, our rule by the majority will. Other reviews have said that you scorn churches and the concept of God. Are these accurate criticisms?
Yes.
Christ, every important moral leader in man's history, has taught us that we should love one another. Why, then, is this kind of love, in your mind, immoral?
It is immoral if it is a love placed above oneself.
And then, if a man is weak or a woman is weak, then she is beyond, he is beyond love?
He certainly does not deserve it. He certainly is beyond.
There are very few of us, then, in this world, by your standards, who are worthy of love.
Unfortunately, yes.
So you're only worthy of love if you are incredibly selfish. Now, here, clip five, this is what Paul Ryan had to say about Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand, more than anyone else, did a fantastic job of explaining the morality of capitalism, the morality of individualism.
There you go. Paul Ryan required his employees to read Atlas Shrugged. He's a devotee of Ayn Rand. Now he's now that he's running for vice president, he's walked that back a little bit because she was an atheist, and he's trying to wave his I'm a Catholic flag, although the nuns on the bus are chasing him around the country going, hey, wait a minute, your budget, which privatizes Social Security and does away with Medicare and rips apart the social safety debt, is not moral. So this is the basis of it. This is the origin. This is why Mitt Romney says in clip one, says this. Why? Because in Ayn Rand's worldview, you've got basically the makers and the takers, right? The makers are the billionaires. The takers are the bureaucrats, the union, the working people. They're all on the take. And that's why Romney says this.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and the government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And I mean, the president starts off with 48, 49, 43. He starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax. 47% of Americans pay no income tax. So our message of low taxes doesn't connect. And you'll be out there talking about tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what they sell every 4 years. And so my job is not to worry about those people.
Not to worry about those people. Not to worry about those people in that 47%. That got chopped off pretty fast there, but... Yeah, it goes on. And why not worry about them? Well, because they're not selfish enough. I mean, Ayn Rand laid it out. They're not worthy of love. They may think that they're entitled to health care, but they're not. Right? Not in Mitt Romney's world, not in Paul Ryan's world, not in Ayn Rand's world. People who are the takers rather than the makers, people who are the moochers rather than the makers, people who are the workers rather than the billionaire, they're not entitled to anything. And if they think they are, then they should vote for Obama. And that's the challenge that Romney has. Right. It's true.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, that really is a challenge he has, because most of us actually do think that we're entitled to health care, that it should be a right and not a privilege.
If I were a rich man, yeah, all day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard.
Is this Mitt Romney's song? Oh, this is If I Were a Rich Man. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. And that's remarkable. Mitt Romney telling his story. Now it's your turn to tell your stories. Chris, listening to WHMP in Amherst, Mass. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. First, Dorothy Parker said of Atlas Shrugged, this book should not be thrown away lightly. It should be heaved with great force.
Dorothy Parker was famous for such pithy comments. That's a great one.
Right, but I think it's a great one too, and very telling. But I wanted to just bring up a quick point about income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no matter what income you're getting, every week, every check, taxes are taken out.
That's
now,
correct.
You might get it back, you might get some of it back, you might get all of it back, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But here's how I want to relate this to. I used to work for a mid-sized grocer. He would pull in about $300,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this guy would not pay his bills until they legally came after him, because he was earning interest on that $300,000 a week.
Sure, there's a name for that in among small business people. It's called financing your company with your receivable or with your payables.
Right. Now, if you think about it, the government, since, you know, taxes are being taken out every week, the government uses that money, and it makes money from that money.
That's right, now, especially during times of high inflation.
Getting it all back.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
and,
it's true.
And, you know, in the same 401ks, they don't match unless they're going to be making money on it. You know, so it's the same kind of thing. So it's just another, you know, Republican thing where they're just not saying the real truth. You know, There are those other kind of taxes that people pay. At the same time, even if you get every penny of your taxes back, the government is still using it and they're still making money off of it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Excellent point, Chris. Thank you for calling and making it. Rich in Denver, Colorado, listening to AM 760. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Great to talk to you, as always. Another thing, you know, about Ayn Rand, with these people is that she was on using healthcare, wasn't she, at the end of her life?
Yes, she was both on. So she had lung cancer when she died, and she was over 65, so she went on Social Security, and she took Medicare to pay for her lung cancer treatments. She smoked her entire life.
Yeah.
Her entire adult life.
The voter fraud out here in Colorado, the attorney general has apparently found 5,000 off the rolls, and 88% of them, according to the Denver Post, are it's either 88 or 82 are independents or Democrats.
Right.
And
surprise, surprise.
And yeah, exactly. Shock of shocks. And you know, I have a term, and it's not mine, but they're worms, white old racist men. And now, in the first time in this country, the history of minority births have surpassed the Caucasian. You know, nitwit has the gene pool needs chlorine, a serious dose of chlorine, and nit is just about pissed, PO'd, sorry, PO'd just about everybody. You know, he's the military, the gays, the women, the Hispanics.
Yeah, no, he is doing a great job of shooting himself in the foot. I mean, he's Ann Richardson, bless her heart and her memory. You know, once said of George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, he can't help himself. He was born with a silver foot in his mouth. And I would say that the same is true of Mitt Romney. Rich, thanks for the call. And Clint Eastwood now has come on. Now, this apropos of your worms, white, old, racist men. Clint, which is not to say that Clint Eastwood is a racist. I have no idea what's in his heart. I frankly doubt he is. But he said, this is as Daily Kos says, another ringing endorsement of Mitt Romney. He said, if somebody is, this is Clint Eastwood yesterday. He said, if somebody is dumb enough to ask me to go to a political convention and say something, they're going to have to take what they get. So Mitt Romney is dumb enough. Right. Raymond in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Raymond, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I feel like the Google ought to do us all a favor and just put a big red flag up when you Google anything on Mitt Romney.
Oh, really?
Because I'm going to tell you why. Number one, I think they should go after him for his taxes again because he's bad about writing stuff off that he ain't supposed to. And also, I'm looking at the way both him and his sidekick, the
Paul Ryan,
vice, yeah. I mean, you watch the way they just straight up lie.
Yeah.
And I guess they feel like that we're just that stupid, as well as they feel like they're writing us off. They feel like we're that stupid. We're not picking up on any of that.
Yeah, no, they're following the big lie technique. You know, oh yeah, President Obama took $716 billion out of Medicare. No, he didn't. I mean, it's a lie. It's just a bald-faced lie. President Obama is doing away with the requirement that people come off welfare and go into work. No, it's not true. I mean, frankly, I think he should, but that's not what happened. In fact, it was Republican governors that Obama was cutting a little more slack to, but he gave them tighter regulations. So it was it's a bald-faced lie. And yeah, they believe that at least their base, at least the Fox News watchers, will believe the lie because they know that the majority of Republicans in the United States right now, the majority of Republicans in the United States, people who are registered as Republicans, do not believe that President Obama was born in this country. Now, nobody raised that question when George Romney was running for president because he was a white guy. But now that it's Barack Obama, it's like, oh, he must be from someplace else. He must be something other than an American, right? And half of Republicans believe that lie. And so Romney's looking at that going, hey, more than half of Republicans will believe a lie. Let's start telling lies. Don't you think?
I'm serious. And, you know, think about it. It's nothing that, as far as, you know, they want to talk about the deaths and all that stuff. It's not nothing that jobs wouldn't cure. And if you think about it, all this, all the last 10 years or however long they've been getting these tax breaks, the rich folks, that is,
yeah,
and talking about these jobs that they're going to create.
It's the last 32 happened. Years is how long it is, Raymond. That's that
oh
Reagan
God.
Started
See,
this.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, when are we going to wake up? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. But, I mean, we have the power, the 47% plus the other about what? 40 more percent, because it's actually about, what, 90, 99% that's probably living below the means. And by the way, I would love to have that job, the middle-class job, for $250,000.
Yeah, so would I. Mitt Romney, that's pretty amazing. Raymond, thanks a lot for, Raymond, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to us. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Yeah, this is kind of bumped off the headlines, the fact that a couple of days ago, Mitt Romney was asked, what's middle income in America? And he said, well, it's $200,000 to $250,000. It's not $100,000, though. Yep, it's the good, the bad, and the very, very unanimously ugly. The good. Medical marijuana. Californian Jason David had tried everything to help his son, Jaden, who suffered from a severe, debilitating, and even fatal form of epilepsy. Jaden was unresponsive to numerous prescription medications. Then his dad heard about medical marijuana, its ability to control seizures and other neurological medical conditions. After using CBD, a chemical extract from marijuana, Jaden went seizure-free for the first time in his life and continues to be improving. However, the medical marijuana dispensary where he gets his marijuana is now the target of a Department of Justice investigation and could be shut down. Jaden is proof that medical marijuana is beneficial in treating health conditions. Rather than condemning it, we should be creating sensible drug policies that America desperately needs. The bad. Eric Bolling, on yesterday's episode of Fox So-Called News, the Five talking head Eric Bolling said that President Obama and his administration answer to the Quran first and the Constitution second. Not surprisingly, that gem of a statement came after Bolling continued to push the newest lie from the right, arguing that the Obama administration has repeatedly apologized to the Muslim world. After Bolling's outrageous remarks, Fox token liberal Bob Beckel slammed his fist in anger, saying that Bolling's remarks were, quote, the most outrageous statement he had ever heard. Couldn't agree with you more, Bob. And the very, very ugly Congressman Steve King. King is introducing a bill in Congress this week which would remove nutrition standards and calorie counts from school lunch programs. He thinks that health and nutrition standards in the nation's schools are making our children starve, so they should be entitled to eat whatever they want. Of course, this isn't surprising coming from a man who stuffs his wallet with donations from Big Food and who thinks Pig Slime is just great. But if the congressman ever stepped foot inside a school, he would see that nearly 20% of our children in the United States are overweight or obese. Obesity has become an epidemic in this country, which is why the federal government has tried to improve the nutrition standards of school lunch programs. Congressman King just doesn't see the problem and wants to keep our children fat, and that is very, very ugly. Have you heard Keith Olbermann's special comment on Romney? This is the most hysterical thing. This is via Moby Picture. I'm pulling this off rawstory.com. You can find it right on their homepage. And this is just a 30-second clip. I'm assuming this is the whole thing. And Keith Olbermann, one of the most brilliant newscasters, broadcasters of my generation, is certainly of my lifetime, one of the absolute most brilliant. And here he is with just the perfect commentary on Mitt Romney's, basically dissing 47% of us.
Good evening. Now, as promised, tonight's special comment on Governor Romney's 47% tape and the news that his fundraiser was staged by a man who conducts sex parties on Long Island. The governor... Governor... I'm sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great, the one and only, literally, the brilliant Keith Olbermann. I'll just leave it at that. I think it stands alone. Keith Olbermann, absolutely brilliant fellow. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I couldn't agree with you more. I really miss Keith. I wish he was on TV still. I don't know where to find him, but he's great.
You can find him on the internet, I think.
Okay, great. Great, thanks. You know, these pirate Republicans who've pirated us for the last 32 years, and if they keep on with Romney here, and if he gets to adopt Ryan's policies, you know, and voucherize Medicare, privatize Social Security, get rid of unemployment insurance, food stamps and the like, you know, it's not going to be long, you know, where we are just transformed into our country into basically the United States of Somalia. It'll be in short order.
They're rapidly turning us into a third world nation. I mean, that's the agenda. That's the agenda. Take us back to Victorian era England, to a small ruling elite, a small middle class like Scrooge and Marley were actually the middle class. They were the shop owners. And a large class of the working poor, like Bob Cratchit. You know, please, Mr. Scrooge, may I have a lump of coal? No, you may not. It'll cost a penny. I can't have that. And it wasn't that Scrooge was the rich people. Scrooge was the middle class, keep in mind. I mean, the really rich, you'd never even show up in most of Dickens' writings. And his, you know, Charles Dickens' father was sent to a debtor's prison. And he knew well of what he wrote. So, and that's the world that the Republicans want to turn us, you know, that's the America that they want to take us back to.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be nothing but just like medieval times. And, you know, I think you're spot on when you mentioned about, and this is what I've thought for a long time, too, is one of the best things, you know, a country like ours can have is really a very, very wealthy Democratic president, you know, such as the Roosevelts, you know, or Kennedy, you know, because they have social consciences. You know, they've got a social conscience, and they cannot be bought off.
Yeah.
So they're going to do what's in the best interest for the people.
Well, that's certainly what happened with Jack Kennedy and with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was that, and arguably with Teddy Roosevelt, too, although he was a Republican. But that was back in the days when there were progressive Republicans, and he called himself a progressive. And in fact, the Republican Party started turning to the right, and he went off and started the Bull Moose Party in 1912. But that concept of noblesse oblige, the obligation of nobility, the obligation to care for society because you were born wealthy, that is something that Mitt Romney has completely missed, whether it's his religion, whether it was his upbringing, whether it's his temperament, whether I don't know what it is. But somehow here's a guy who was born with millions and who made hundreds of millions and you know, married a woman who was very, very wealthy, raised his family, surrounds himself, you know, went to the very best schools, and somehow never managed to get that. Maybe it's that he came of age in the Reagan 80s, although he came of age in the 60s, just like I did. So, I'm younger than he is, but only by a few years. I don't get it. You know, I don't get what he missed, but somehow he missed it because he's part of that very wealthy class, and yet totally missed the concept of noblesse oblige. Thank you, Steve. Excellent point. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
Hello, Tom. How you doing today?
I'm getting better every day, Corky. What's on your mind?
I'm just concerned. I'm getting a little slow in my old age. I couldn't figure Romney out for the longest time. Mm-hmm. But then it struck me when I heard that video. He's not concerned with governing. He just wants the title to put in his basket of to-do list, you know?
His bucket list.
Yeah, his bucket list.
His, I've got to do this before I die. Being president of the United States is on his checklist, and so that's...
Right. So you're going to wind up with Ryan and Norquist and Cantor. They're going to do the governing.
Right.
Like Norquist said, we just need somebody to sign the digits. And Romney says, give me the title, and I'll provide the digits.
Yeah, excellent point, Corky. Thank you very much. It may well be. I don't know. Again, I can't see into this man's heart or soul, and it seems more opaque than most people's, frankly. But I wouldn't claim that I could in any case. Paul, in Garden City, Utah. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I wanted to point out a few things about Romney basically calling 47% of the country freeloaders.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, hundreds of thousands of the people that need government help were put there by Mitt Romney and Bain Capital, you know, buying their companies, shipping their jobs overseas, stealing their pensions, you know.
Yeah, I can tell you firsthand. I worked for 2 years for a company that Bain Capital bought, and they came in and they fired probably a third of the people who worked there and made everybody work a whole lot harder and a lot more hours and do more with less. And you know, they loaded this company with massive debt. I mean, it was amazing. I saw it with my own eyes.
Yeah, there you go. And then also, Bain Capital got a government bailout of millions of dollars, I understand, right? So who's the real freeloader?
Yeah, well, that was back in the 80s. Mitt Romney's, when Bain Capital was first starting out, he drove it into the ground. It was bankrupt, and he threatened bankruptcy, and he got all the creditors to allow him to pay them off at 30 cents on the dollar, including the FDIC, including our government. So, yeah, Paul, you know, you're absolutely right. Mitt Romney basically ripped all of us off, and now he's laughing all the way to the bank. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, thanks for listening to TomHartman.com. What's up?
Thank you, Tom. Work with me on this because we need to explain this to the people out there so that they understand how they're being duped by the Romneys that use...
I think they're starting to figure it out, Armin.
Well, here's a factoid that I've studied because somebody told me a long time ago, and I try to do it as far out there as I can do it, with the trajectory.
Sure.
And have you ever had people tell you to follow the money?
Yeah, well, go for it fast. You got 30 seconds, Armin.
Okay, the majority of the people in this country that pay the majority of the income taxes also keep the majority of the equity and capital that the government, through government jobs, contracts, and spending, circulates through the economy.
Sure.
So they end up keeping the majority of it,
yeah.
And they pay the majority of the taxes, and they're still getting a better deal because you know the baseline for anywhere living outside of underneath the bridge is $30,000 to $35,000 now in this country.
Yeah, it's
okay, and
it
they
seems.
Know that.
Yeah, because the median individual wage is $25,000, and the median family wage is around $45,000. So yeah. Yeah, I think your numbers are absolutely right, Armin. Thank you. Well said. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back here on the Tom Hartman program. Is it possible? I raised this question before, and I'm going to comment on this after the break. Is it possible that Mitt Romney actually helped himself as that comment got out there?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'll share with you a scenario after the break where Romney may have actually done himself a favor by dissing 47% of us.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the files of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
So how is it that Romney could have actually helped himself with this, and why did he double down on it last night? I mean, keep in mind, he held a press conference last night where he said, yes, basically I stand by that statement that the 47% of Americans who don't pay federal income taxes, half of whom, by the way, are on Social Security, and half of whom are working poor with children, so their child tax deductions take their income tax down to zero. Now, Mitt Romney himself takes so many deductions. I mean, he takes the carried interest deduction, so he only pays 13.9% plus the charitable deductions and others, and who knows what he's doing with his Swiss bank accounts and his Cayman Island accounts and things like that. But in any case, his point is the people who don't pay any income taxes, they're going to just vote for Obama. How could that possibly help him? Here's how it would help him. This is the core message that the Limbaughs and the Savages and the Hannitys of the world have been promoting for decades. This is the core conservative message. That anybody who gets anything from government, forget the fact that, you know, Mitt Romney got the FDIC to give him 30 cents on the dollar, that he was bailed out by government back in the 80s when Bain Capital wasn't doing so well. Set that aside. Set aside the fact that that Reagan changed the law so that Bain Capital's business model would work. Set that aside, because if you're wealthy and you get things from government, it's a whole different thing. That's not government dependency. That's actually manipulation of the government by you, the brilliant class. That's the masters of the universe that Ayn Rand wrote about in Atlas Shrugged. Are you following this? I'm dead serious about this. There's two kinds of people who get money from government. There are the masters of the universe like Mitt Romney who get money from the government because they're brilliant enough to manipulate government or they're rich enough to buy off politicians. And then there are the people who depend on government because their husband or wife left them or died or they got sick. They got cancer, they broke their leg, they were in a car crash, and their spine is injured, and they're never going to be able to work again. They were born into abject poverty, and the school that they went to really sucked, and they never really got the kind of education that would have allowed them to achieve their potential. All of those people, they're the leeches of society. They're the moochers. They're the takers, to use Ayn Rand's, literally to use Ayn Rand's words. There's the makers and the takers. So there's two kinds of people who get benefits from government. There's the masters of the universe, and there's the moochers and takers. And so basically what Romney did is he affirmed, for anybody who's ever listened seriously and taken seriously the words of people like Limbaugh and Hannity and all the, you know, all these other right-wingers, and or watches Fox News regularly, he affirmed for them that worldview. And if he can get that, and that's the Republican base. That's the Tea Party base, who's been very lukewarm about Mitt Romney. I mean, they sort of like the fact that he picked Paul Ryan, but they're still very lukewarm about him. And he's been trying to tack to the center over the last few weeks. And, you know, let's get these guys in the middle. It's going to be just a few points. But what he really needs is he needs the base to show up and show up big and bring along their brother-in-law and sister-in-law, who might be in the middle. That's what he really needs. And I would submit to you that with this so-called gaffe, that he did that. And that the 3 hours that I was on the air, Sean Hannity was on the air, and I'll bet during those 3 hours he was congratulating Romney for saying that. And I'll bet you that today that for 3 hours, Rush Limbaugh was congratulating Romney for finally speaking the truth, finally daring to tell the story of the moochers. This is a story that a lot of people in America believe enough that they can, that if he can genuinely energize them, they can actually swing an election. And that's why he didn't walk away from it last night. That's why he doubled down on it. Now, time will tell. We'll see. Mike in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks to you and Ed. Love your presence on this channel.
Thank you.
I wanted to urge you guys to talk more, because as much as I listen, I never hear this about the whole Medicare privatization issue. There's two big reasons it's really bad. One, and I don't hear this, so correct me if you guys are talking about it. One is all private insurance companies reserve the right to deny coverage based on a procedure being either not medically necessary or not reasonable and customary.
Correct.
Medicare doesn't do that. Medicare has no claims department overlooking and second-guessing your doctors. Private companies do. So it's much more risky insurance, and there are hundreds of legions of stories about people who've had their lives screwed up because the insurance company wouldn't pay.
Yes.
That won't happen under Medicare.
Well, Medicare does have some standards, but you're right. They're much less rigid than those of the for-profit insurance companies.
They don't have a claims department. The second big issue is when you get healthcare treatment, you never walk into United Healthcare to get treatment. You never walk into Humana to get treatment. You'll never set foot in an insurance company's office to get healthcare treatment.
Right, you don't
so
show.
Here's this enormous sum of money going to the insurance companies for their fancy buildings, their expensive salaries,
yeah,
and their profits for no healthcare.
That's
why
right. I have pointed out hundreds of times on this program, Mike, that for example, the CEO. Stephen J. Helmsley, the CEO of United Healthcare, who made over $1 billion, never gave a vaccination to a single kid. Or if you find vaccinations controversial, never looked in anybody's throat to see if they had strep throat. Never treated anybody for anything, but made over $1 billion. The guy behind him, Dollar Bill McGuire, who was the CEO of United Healthcare for 10 years before Helmsley took over, made $1.7 billion. I mean, these guys, there's over 100 people making over $1 million a year in United Healthcare. This is, and most of it is on Medicare. I mean, they're Medicare part, whatever it is, a B or C or whatever, you know, the one where the Republicans drilled all the holes in it. Now they fill in the coverage. These guys are not, they're not part of the health industry. They are banksters. Let's call them what they are. They're banksters. So anyhow, coming up tomorrow, it's going to be really an interesting drama to see how Romney gets out of this. So, or if he doubles down. As I said, you know how many people are supporting him on this. But in any case, don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.